Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Bottled in China. I'm your host, Emily Steckenborn, and this is the podcast where we talk about wine, food, beer, and hey, how about blockchain in the F&B industry today? Today, we're joined with Billy Chan, who is the founder of Dropchain. He's been in the industry and living in Shanghai for quite a while, and a fascinating podcast talking about a lot of pain points that a lot of the brands have and distributors have out here in China. Because as you know, a lot of the time when we sell some of the brands, it's hard for a lot of us to track. And I think he said it so well today is Dropchain is all about from farm to fork, trying to find traceability in the industry for various products. And in China, a huge issue with over what's estimated at 70%+ alcohol is fake in the market, and there's 40 billion worth of problems out here in the world. So take a quick listen and speak to you guys soon. All right, welcome back to another episode of Bottled in China. Today, I'm super lucky. I'm here with Billy Chan, who is the founder of Dropchain. Billy, welcome to the episode.
Welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm super excited because we were just talking about it. I really think that Dropchain is really almost a solution to a lot of the problems that we face in the drink industry, in the food industry. And being out here in China really is something that I think there's a lot of talk about how we can solve issues surrounding traceability of different products. But first, before we get into that, I want to just know more about you. You know, where you come from? How did you wind up here in China?
That's a good question. You know, how did I wind up in China? It's been a, I would say almost like an 8-year adventure. Obviously, I'm from Canada, born and raised in Vancouver, BC. Pretty much spent most of my life there. And then I moved to Montreal, where I went to school at McGill. And then eventually I decided to move back to Vancouver to do my master's. And at that point, I figured I'm going to retire there, man. Vancouver is one of the most beautiful cities in the world. You can ski in the morning and go to the beach at night, hop on a boat. It's just the perfect life. But then I did one crazy thing, and that's I went on a school trip to Shanghai. My first time in China. And I got off the plane, and wow, this city just captured me like right from the start. And that's when I decided it was that trip back in 2000, I believe 10. I came to Shanghai then, and I spent a week here. And afterwards, I said, you know what? I mean, Vancouver is one of the most beautiful cities in the world, but the future is China. The future is Shanghai. So
I'm super shocked about that because, you know, I think somebody coming from Vancouver, and as we know, Vancouver being a super lifestyle spot, you were mentioning before, you know, you go skiing in the morning, you can go swimming at night, everyone's super relaxed. Shanghai is the complete opposite. So was it just because it was the future and then you thought this is where you've got to be? Or really was it a connection to the environment, the food, like what really was the tick?
It's a little bit of everything. So one is also, first thing is the connection to the environment, culturally speaking, right? It was my first time back in China or first time to China. Mm. And as being in Canadian born Chinese, it hit home that, wow, like culturally speaking, there's a lot of connection there. Mm-hmm. From a cultural level and an emotional level. Mm-hmm. So we'll start from there. And then also from a, I would say career level, I realized there's so many opportunities in China, not only in Shanghai. When I came here, at least back then, there was a huge demand for foreign talent in China. And it was relatively easy, actually, for me to find a job at that point. I applied to a few tech companies. I've been in tech my entire life. Mm-hmm. I worked in tech development, consulting, sales and marketing. And then eventually, you know, moving into China, I figured I'd be involved in tech as well. And luckily, the opportunity came up with Microsoft. Mm-hmm. So Microsoft hired me to come to China and manage their anti-piracy program.
So this is almost crazy because now Dropchain is again kind of trying to fight that sense of
counterfeit.
Yeah. When you were working at Microsoft, now, you also kind of did a startup before also as well, doing kind of drinks industry. How did you transition from Microsoft and in the tech industry, jumping out into focusing more on food and beverage? What was the calling for that?
Yeah, there's a couple areas there. Actually, my background, my personal career background is in tech, but my family background is in restaurants. So we've been in small business in Canada. So if you happen to be in Vancouver and you go to a Chan's Kitchen, Chan's Garden, and I believe like Chan's Place, it's one of my uncle's owns that restaurant. So we've been
really
as a family, we've been running small businesses for generations in Canada.
Wow, okay.
So I have a very, I would say, a deep emotional connection with small businesses. Mm. And growing up as part of an immigrant family in a Chinese restaurant, working in the kitchen, working in out front, yeah, waiting tables, you get to see how hard it is to be a small business owner. It's very tough in Canada, not only in Canada, but in China. I mean, most small businesses fail within their first year, I think 70 to 80%. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is due to the fact that they're small businesses. They can't get good pricing on their products. Their procurement costs are high. They can't manage their business well. And, you know, costs run up and then the business takes a downturn and then they run out of money and they shut down. And it's very tough. We see that a lot. Mm-hmm. Luckily, my family was okay, mm-hmm, and we made it through. But I do see how hard it is for a family to run a small business. And that's why when I left Microsoft and I said, you know, if I want to do something, I want to do my own startup, what should we focus on? And I want to focus on helping the small business community in China. And not only that, you know, I focus on alcohol because one of the biggest problems that small business owners face if you're in the F&B industry is fake alcohol.
That is such a big topic. And I think that, you know, working in the industry as well, it's something that we always try to talk about and try to fight for RRP. We try to fight to make sure that we have the right and correct product is getting to the right hands. And so often it happens, and, you know, you're an expert in this now. You hear stories that people get sick the next day because of fake alcohol in China. So you shouldn't drink these wines or you shouldn't drink this alcohol because of the fake wine. And, you know, it could happen, but it's not always the case. So, you know, tell me a little bit more about what you're working on now called DropChain. Super exciting, kind of related to what we're discussing. Tell me about how that got started.
Well, a lot of it got started because of a couple of things. Environmental factors is realizing that there's so much fake alcohol in China. And two is actually brands have access to build this solution for them. I'll start with the first one. With fake alcohol. So we've been in the alcohol distribution scene for about, I would say, 4 years, over mm-hmm. 4 years now. So we've kind of been in the down and dirty corners of alcohol distribution. So we've kind of seen all the bad and good things that have been going on in China. And we realized that fake alcohol is indeed still an issue in this country today. And not only in China, but the rest of the world too. I mean, in China, 70% of wine is fake. And that's kind of scary.
So, okay, I want to kind of ask you about that quote there. I've heard a lot of stats. I mean, is that stat, do you think that's reflective of the entire China or is that more tier cities? Because when you come into Shanghai, you go into some regions, it's not as apparent as when you really go down into the tier cities.
Yeah, so in a more developed city like Shanghai, or actually, I'm just going to say only Shanghai.
That's about it, right?
Within Shanghai, I would say it's relatively safe. I would say that stat it applies to pretty much all of China on mm-hmm. average. Okay. 70% it sounds very high. And I would believe that if you actually left Shanghai, that stat is actually quite true. Mm. I lived in Beijing for about over half a year. And I remember during that time there, my entire 6 months there, there was not once where I couldn't have a cocktail or a beer and not have a migraine or a hangover the next day. And I'm talking about just one drink. And I can handle my alcohol, you know.
So you were actually put through the test, right?
I was put through the test for a good 6 months. And there's not a single bar that can serve me a drink where I couldn't get a hangover. And now and then I moved to Shanghai and everything is great. I can, you know, I can't say I'm drinking bottles of whiskey every night, but I can have a few drinks and the next day I'm feeling great. And all of that has to do with the source of the alcohol and where it comes from. And the challenge in China is alcohol distribution is very opaque. It's almost like a black hole when it comes to alcohol distribution. And that's where brands came to us and they told us that, say, hey, we have an issue in that we can see our supply chain data maybe down to a tier one distribution level. So, you know, brands would sell their goods into a particular country and then they sell it to one big distributor. And then that guy will buy all that good, the goods from them. But below that, they sell to multiple tiers of distributors as well. The challenge is that for brands, they don't see any of that. They don't know where it gets sold to. They can't even tell me who drinks their beer.
Yeah.
They literally cannot. Not, or which restaurants buy their beer. They guess. And that's where a lot of the pains came from. And big brands, medium-sized brands, small brands started coming to me. Even craft beers and independent mm-hmm. wine brands from other countries, they came to me with the same pain point. And we said, wow, this is an issue that DropChain can actually solve. Mm-hmm. And we can actually leverage cutting edge technology and try to drive traceability and transparency into alcohol distribution. And that kind of started from there. And then once we started that project, different food groups came to me. I was like, banana companies.
Wait, why are we tracing the banana?
I don't know. I'm still talking to them about that. It's amazing. Yeah, we're talking about like foodstuffs from around the world, not just limited to alcohol. We're talking about like honey, maple syrup. Yes, as you know, and lots of other foodstuff, which olive oil, 80% of the world's olive oil is fake or untraceable. And that's a scary stat, right? I mean, most Western countries, olive oil is a very staple in your everyday, you know,
food diet.
Food diet. And, you know, and to say that 80% of it is untraceable, that's kind of scary because you don't know if it's really extra virgin olive oil you're drinking. Or
that's I did hear about that one. Now, also in China, the food safety is a huge aspect. I think a couple years ago, there was a very big scare with the child infant formula.
Yeah.
We do hear, like I mentioned, about fake alcohol. Obviously, increasingly for the fake spirits, because that's really where I think you could have, you know, you could actually be very sick from it. In terms of other food, what is one of the foods right now in China that's kind of being very closely evaluated because there's a lot of fake food going on? I know you said maybe olive oil could be one. What else have you heard of that is a big scare?
Besides alcohol, milk powder, obviously.
Is still a big concern.
Still a big concern. Just milk in general. Because there's a huge scandal a few years back regarding the milk industry, right?
Yeah.
Remember, I think half a decade ago
or
more than that. If you talk to the average Chinese consumer, nobody will drink Chinese milk. And it's not because they don't want to. It's because we all understand that the supply chain is still very much, I would say, immature.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard for people to really trust and rely local supply chains when it comes to food safety.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the areas that the government's putting focus on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I have a family. I have a daughter. And I do think about what she drinks and eats every day. And milk is a primary part of her diet. And, you know, every time I open a canister of milk powder or I open up a bottle of fresh milk, I do question whether that bottle is legit or not. Did someone just mix it with melamine? Is that what they call it? Did they mix it with chemicals and some water and some food coloring agent and then just called it a day? Or is it really a bottle of fresh milk?
And
that's not only me. I would say 99%, most parents I speak to, they harbor the same kind of worries in China when trying to feed their family. And that's what hit home to me. And that's why when we started doing Drop Chain, I said, you know, alcohol is definitely one of our key focuses because alcohol is a huge problem in China when it comes to fake counterfeit goods. But when we look at the bigger picture, there's a lot of areas that you can apply this technology to across different food verticals, not only just alcohol. You can think, like I said, like milk powder, honey, even olive oil. Although I don't know how much olive oil is used in Chinese cooking, but there's a lot of potential there, right? So, and the core of this technology, I mean, if I were to try to do this same thing maybe about 5 to 10 years ago, it'd be very difficult.
Yeah.
We're pretty much limited by the technologies of our time back then. But in today's society, we have new technology coming up that's kind of ready to kind of take over in terms of taking the internet, taking the overall society's like technical infrastructure, like up to the next level.
So for people that don't know about DropChain right now, if you were to explain it, is it like an app? Is it a website? I mean, can you give us a little bit more background about how it's being used right now and kind of the idea of how somebody would be able to kind of find it and et cetera?
Yeah. So DropChain is essentially an end-to-end ecosystem that enables brands to trace their goods from end-to-end, from farm to fork. So it allows them to gain visibility and traceability into their own supply chains. And by doing so, it allows consumers to trace that same product from the end back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from end-to-end. And what this will enable is it holds the entire food supply chain accountable for the work that they do. And once you start seeing transparency in your supply chain, you start seeing less fake goods because bad guys realize they can't slip in a fake bottle of milk. They can't slip in a fake bottle of alcohol as easily. And it'll naturally reduce the amount of counterfeits in that particular, I would say, industry vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what DropChain is trying to do. We're trying to build an ecosystem to help brands better understand where their goods are going into the marketplace. And by doing so, we're also directly, I would say, handling the whole counterfeit foodstuff issue that exists in China today. Now, there's a lot of supply chain, I would say, software out there, or ecosystems out there. But what Dropchain is kind of doing differently is that we've been in the industry for many years. We've worked with distributors and we've worked with restaurateurs. We've worked with brands, countless, hundreds of them. And we realize that one of the inherent pain points that exists in the industry today is that a lot of distributors or lower level distributors, they are not as willing to give up logistical data to brands.
I mean, that's of course, I think it's just because also then it's so that transparency is also for them a way to hide. You know, if you don't show everywhere your bottles are going, you can sometimes try to hide a lot of what you have or can't sell or et cetera. Now, I know you mentioned that there's also, when I was taking a look at it, there's also that gamification that you do to it. Can you explain why, how is that integrated? Why you think that's a way that people can actually use it? Because a lot of the problems with Dropchain, or not with Dropchain, but just in terms of that following the product from A to Z, is more about trying to make people scan it or enter or use it so that we can actually trace it.
Yeah. So the key to supply chain transparency is actually every stakeholder along the supply chain, every distribution node actually committing some sort of logistical data. And the reason why a lot of them haven't been willing to do it up to this point, and we speak to them on a daily basis, is that they're not being compensated to do that work. Mm. It's as simple as that. It's really like an incentivization problem. So a lot of distributors tell me, like, brands demand that they do this stuff all the time, but they're not paying them to do it. It's a waste of their time. Their job is to sell alcohol.
But, that's so true. Yeah. That is actually probably it's really interesting when you say it like that, because it kind of makes sense now. All of a sudden it's like, well, of course, why would they do extra work? They're already, you know, head over heels with hundreds of things to do. And then that's free work.
These guys are some of the hardest working people I've ever met. I mean, they drive and deliver goods nonstop, like I would say nonstop all day long. And for them to then go home and open up what your ERP system or an Excel spreadsheet and enter like logistics data is like the last thing that they want to do, especially if you're not compensating them for their time.
Yeah.
And that's where kind of we realize that because of our experience in the industry for the last several years that, wait, what if we're able to incentivize each distribution point and we reward them for actually contributing data to the supply chain? It's as simple as that. That's something that hasn't been done in any supply chain, I would say, ecosystem out there today, at least for software. I mean, at least for alcohol, pardon me. And we realize that this is actually an area where we can really innovate. And then we started talking to brands about this, and brands were coming back and telling us, hey, nobody does this out there, because obviously their brands, they've seen countless supply chain ERP systems, and they're for like, sure, what you guys are trying to do is has not been done. Mm-hmm. They've never thought about actually incentivizing distribution points to gain further transparency and traceability into their own supply chain. Because if they're able to do that, then they get the data they need to make better business decisions, marketing decisions. Where do they put their operational budgets? Which cities? Which districts?
Certainly.
Yeah, I would say it's almost for brands. They feel it's almost like a game changer for them. So we started looking into how we can do it, and we realized there's two elements to it. One is actually incentivizing each distribution point.
Yeah.
Strategically and dynamically incentivizing it. And two is also gamifying it. So my chief of product, he's been making games for years. He used to be a Tencent producer. Games producer.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So this is going to be a lot of fun though.
No, it's going to be fun for him. So, and then he went on to create his own company and they started making his game called Call of Duty. So,
oh yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, isn't that one of the most iconic games though?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't play games and I know this. So let's just say that's a pretty cool game then.
Yeah. He's got a pretty storied background. And when he came to me, he said, Billy, man, we can gamify the entire supply chain. And I said, what do you mean? Like, that's, sounds kind of crazy. I mean, so gamification is more like, I would say, relegated to like gaming, right?
Yeah,
like you're making a video game, you want to gamify it. And he's like, no, every part of society you can gamify, including supply chains. We could take something as boring as supply chains, gamify each part of it so that it increases engagement rate, it increases the amount of user participation, and obviously also the, what do you call it? In Chinese, we call it a huihu lu, like the comeback rate, the return rate of your users. And we can use a lot of the techniques that traditional game companies have been using for decades in supply chains to kind of to change user behavior. Because he put it actually very well. It's like, look, if you use technology, it only solves part of the problem. Just saying, oh, I'm going to use a blockchain technology or some sort of crazy technology won't really change the future on its own. In order to really change the future or really do something that's innovative, you have to actually be able to change human behavior. Mm-hmm. So in order to change human behavior, you have to incentivize them in some way. And you also have to gamify the experience so that it keeps them wanting more. So if you're actually able to kind of slowly, I would say, change human behavior that way, you can then really start enacting real change. Because I see a lot of projects, they promise that they're going to build a huge, sexy, fancy alcohol or food supply chain ecosystem, and they're going to use the latest cutting edge technology, but then that's it. And then that doesn't change anything. You're just changing the database.
And I also think that that huge issue is always that it's always the same consumers that are getting the same kind of new data, the new program that they have to integrate so that it helps them track better, but it doesn't benefit the person using it. It always benefits the people who are trying to implement it.
Yes.
So if it doesn't get implemented as it moves forward, actually it doesn't really
It doesn't work. No.
So that's such an interesting angle that you're taking. Now, while you were, I'm sure, building it and testing it, how are people feeling with this entire gamification? Am I saying it right? Is it gamification?
I call it gamification.
Gamification.
Gamification. It's actually not even a word. I tried looking it up.
Okay, good. So I can't be corrected on a word that actually doesn't really exist.
Yeah, I don't think that Webster has thrown it into their international, like their dictionary yet. Maybe they haven't. I'll check it out tonight on Google.
Yeah, no, 2018 is the year though.
Yeah, this year is it. This year is it.
I mean, has it been tested? Does it work in China?
Yeah. So actually, that's one of the most exciting things. A lot of brands have told me that this concept will work. And we just have to figure out. There's a lot of things. It's not easy. It's not an easy process. How much do you incentivize each distribution point? How far do you gamify it? These are things that we're actually working on right now with multiple brands we're partnering with. Mm-hmm. Several brands want to work with us to help us develop out DropChain's ecosystem. Because frankly speaking, I don't know how a brand operates, right? As a company, as a software company, we're focused on building the ecosystem. But the pain points, the specific pain points of a brand and the inner workings of their business is not something that we have much transparency into. Mm-hmm. So that's why a lot of brands have come to us and said, look, we have a lot of information or data or business information that you may not have and network resources, and we can work together to build out DropChain. And I'm very lucky that a lot of the brands that we've worked with over the last few years, because we've been helping them sell alcohol, they've come back and said, look, you're trying to do something that's truly transformational and innovative in their space. And for them, they think that this is a great opportunity for them to start using, I would say, the latest cutting edge technology to kind of really try to enact change in their industry.
For sure.
Because they've heard enough stories, right? But this is like one of the first stories they've heard that, wow, this idea might work. It's going to take a lot of work. But obviously, it's something that we believe in that we can actually work towards and achieve. So you'll see in the next 3 months or so. Yeah.
So where are you at in the process right now for DropChain?
So we're in the process of architecturing and building out the entire system. Mm-hmm. We're working very closely with partners, both brands and distributors and even restaurateurs.
Hmm.
Yeah, we have a pretty big network. So we're leveraging all the people that we've built strategic relationships with over the last several years. And they're helping us kind of architecturing and building all this entire DropChain ecosystem out. Because without them, we'd just be a bunch of nerdy engineers who have no experience running a brand, you know, or a distributor. Yeah. So, and that's where partnerships are so important in what we're trying to do. So, and we're building it out right now. We're estimating that it's going to take about 3 months before we have our first MVP out. Real live working minimum viable product that our brands are actually going to use in their supply chain.
Very cool.
So we're super excited about that.
Now, when we look at this, I just have a question. You were just saying that blockchain is kind of big. Everyone's talking about it. We hope it's the solution of the future. Do you really believe in blockchain, or do you feel that this is like AI and VR? And VR had its moment. Everyone kind of thought this is going to change the wine industry because you can, you know, almost feel like you're in the winery. But it didn't really work as well as we thought it did. Do you really think that blockchain is the solution, or do you think it's just the next stepping stone and getting closer? Or is this actually, are we there?
I think blockchain is more of a stepping stone. There's something that needs to be done in the future. It's some technology that we don't know that exists, that we don't know that has not been invented yet, right? So the internet was kind of like the first layer in terms of traceability and transparency. You know, we're able to democratize data. You can get price good, fair pricing and access to price sheets across the internet. So that kind of disrupted a lot of the information that was limited in the past.
Certainly.
And then came the problem of traceability and transparency. And then we couldn't solve that problem. And then now blockchain came along, and blockchain is something that I researched into for quite a while. I'm a nerd, so I read a lot of stuff.
I'm getting that now.
Yeah. So this stuff, like, I was truly passionate about, and a lot of my friends were into it because you can buy and sell coins and make money. Yeah. That does not interest me. I am very passionate about the technology and what blockchain can actually bring to the table in terms of solving real world business problems or real world, like, societal problems. And that's where we realized, wow, a lot of the core tenets of, or the core features of blockchain, like the ability to trace something from end to end and the transparency of data. And not only that, once data enters the blockchain, it cannot be changed. So it's immutable.
See, that's very fascinating.
Yeah.
Can I just ask, you know, because somebody that doesn't know tech as well as you do, could it be, if somebody does have, let's say, a fake bottle of wine, could they actually fake the blockchain? Is there a possibility of creating a crypto before that, to once that they put in the information that they've already pre-created in the system, they've shown a trace back, although it's their own trace back. Mm. Could they create that?
So there's always a way to defraud a system, I guess, or to fraud.
Yeah. Well, listen, I don't know if this is my next, you know, calling.
Yeah, you could be doing that. So that's a good question, because a lot of people ask me about that too. And that's the limit. One of the inherent limitations of blockchain technology is that blockchain is limited by the data that you put into a blockchain. If you put in dirty data, you have a dirty blockchain, right? And if you put in good data, that's great. But that herein lies a problem. How do you ensure that the data that you're putting into a blockchain is clean? How do you make sure it's not fraudulently data? It's a fake bottle that some bad distributor is trying to sneak into your blockchain. You know, maybe he'll try to sneak a few cases in there, and then it'll be masqueraded as a, you know, real bottle or a real shipment. That's a big problem. And I don't think many people are solving that. We're actively trying to solve it. So there's actually a lot of, I would say, research on being done out there today that related to actually being able to, to be able to ascertain whether a bottle of wine is fake or not based on its logistical data. So you can actually, to a certain degree of confidence, predict whether a bottle of wine or a case of beer is fake or not, just based on the data that you have on that particular shipment, as well as where it was before, like its previous supply chain data. So you can actually make some, like, assumptions. Like, for instance, a bottle of wine that today is in Shanghai, and then for some reason tomorrow it's in Moscow.
And then you would see that that actually doesn't correlate correctly.
It doesn't correlate correctly. Yeah. I'm just using a very high level example. Like, there's a velocity kind of consistency that you have to maintain. Like, a bottle of wine just cannot travel overnight from one city to another, or a shipment should not be in two parts of the continent at the same time. It just doesn't make sense. Yeah. Although we can't say that bottle is fake or that case is, or that shipment is fake, we'll definitely raise some red flags when it comes to, you know, brands understanding where their goods go. It's like, this particular shipment not only showed up in Shanghai, which is where it's supposed to be, but tomorrow, like a week later or a few days later, it was showing up in Moscow. It was showing up in, I don't know, in the UK. And we can't say it's fake or it's real, but you decide. And we're just giving brands the data that they need to make better decisions, like I said. Yeah. And they'll see this and be like, wow, okay. And they can decide on what's best as a, where are the next steps that they should take as a business. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build an ecosystem that allows brands to be able to trace that data. They didn't actually have those tools before. And we're trying to give them the tools that they need so that they can, you know, make, you know, to do better.
You know, and that's really fascinating. And I really do think that whatever is being created that can get us closer to trying to track where our products are going, first of all, it provides clarity for a lot of the brands. And I think that that's something that you discussed at the beginning, is trying to understand. So many times I've heard in so many different occasions, brand owners saying that they sold a case, or they sold a container, or they sold six containers of wine, and they have no clue even who was the buyer, where's the wine now, who's drinking it, what's the price it's been selling at. They're kind of blindfolded by that. Now, it's not always bad if you don't need to know the information, but the problem with that is a lot of the times, and it's a discussion that we always have, is for a lot of people that the brand is not very famous, it might sit in a warehouse, or it might actually never be sold. So by not having traceability, you never really know where's your brand and what's going on with it. So I think that whatever you're creating with your team, I think is very interesting, because it is a step forward, and there is, you know, more clarity towards that.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that we're very passionate about in terms of solving a problem. But the biggest problem we're trying to solve is, like I mentioned, like just the overall food supply problem.
Yeah.
And not food supply. Where the biggest problem we're trying to solve right now is being able for consumers to rebuild the trust that they've lost in their food network. And that's something that we've been passionate about, or we've realized it is a problem in the industry today, that a lot of consumers that we speak to, they're just worried about the food that they eat.
Do you feel, I know that you mentioned you have a daughter and that it obviously is a huge concern for you. Do you think that in China, this is naturally going to solve itself? Or do you feel that having what you're doing is going to be a push in the right direction? Do you think that government regulations being more tight also can solve it? What's your feeling on that?
Yeah, so blockchain and what we're trying to do is more of a push in the right direction. It's not going to be a kind of a silver bullet. I wish it was. If we were the silver bullet.
So.
Yeah, I hope we're the silver bullet. I think we're kind of a step in the right direction, and we're going to solve that. I think we're advancing where society needs to be. And I think that's all we can do as a business every day. We're trying to move society forward. I think that's the most important thing that we're trying to do. And right now, if you look at from various angles, I think from a government legislation point of view, there can be a lot more can be done. And not only legislation, but actually enforcement, ensuring that people that are caught selling fake milk or fake alcohol are punished accordingly, or at least, punished accordingly, I think is a fair
word
to say.
That's a nice, I was going to say, I don't want to go into too many details.
Yeah,
there's
a lot of bad words I want to call these people, because I do run into them here and there. And
is that so?
Yeah. I mean, in my business, we sell alcohol, right?
Yeah.
And you run into a lot of pretty shady people and a lot of good people too, hardworking Chinese people. But then there's a huge segment that are just people who don't really care about the greater health of society, and they just want to sell fake alcohol or fake water.
Whatever makes money.
Well, whatever.
So fake water as well in China.
Yeah, I'm not going to go too much into that, but there's definitely.
That's always fascinating.
Yeah, you can fake anything. Not only in China, right? I mean.
Oh, everywhere.
Yeah,
sure.
Everywhere. Like I remember in 2013, there was a case of horse meat in Eastern Europe that was sold to the UK. It was a huge shipment and it was sold as beef.
It was horse meat.
It was actually all horse meat. And they realized later on that, oh my God, that shipment of beef was actually horse meat. And that's scary because it's not because it's horse meat, because a lot of countries eat horse as a very normal part of their everyday diet. But the fact that
it was labeled incorrectly and misleading.
In a first world, fully developed country like the United Kingdom, right? It's not like a third world country is developing, they can't trace their goods. No, this is the United Kingdom, like, a beacon of the developed world.
Yeah.
And that's scary because it just shows how immature food supply chains are today.
That is certainly such an important statement. And I really think that hopefully Dropchain will be a really big step in the right direction and also provide so much more clarity for not only in China, but in a larger space. And I think China, we are definitely trying to attack these problems. But then you think of all the other countries, Vietnam coming up, Cambodia, all emerging markets in Asia, anywhere. Everyone is starting off on the same foot, because everyone is trying to get accustomed to the products. And there's so many, like you said, it's a black hole. You never know where your products go. You don't really know where it ends up. So I really love your analogy of from farm to fork,
farm to fork,
beyond farm to table, farm to fork. I love it. I totally agree with you on that one.
Thank you.
So I do want to wrap up in a little bit, and I have a couple questions to fire at you. So these are not always that difficult, so don't worry.
As long as not math or Chinese history.
So here's a computer. Please solve a code. We're not going to do that. So I know you've been in Shanghai for quite a while, but you've also been in Vancouver. So I do want to know, what's your favorite restaurant in Vancouver?
Oh, my favorite restaurant in Vancouver is Ho Yun Ki. I know I can't pronounce it. It's He Yuan Ji.
Okay.
He Yuan Ji. They make like the best sticky rice, steamed sticky rice and crab I've had in a long time. Yeah, it's like they put a crab in a massive bamboo basket on a layer of, I think, a sticky rice. and then they steam it, right? And afterwards, you just have like the most amazing kind of sticky rice because it absorbs all the crab juice, right? And it's just, or you can have it with lobster too. But next time you go to Vancouver, you have to try it. He Yuan Ji.
And where is that? Just so if anyone's listening, they can actually have a great meal tonight.
I wish I remembered the street that it was on off the top of my head. So I think,
Get near downtown or no?
No, it is in between downtown and South Vancouver. Let me try to figure it out.
Oh, no worries.
I wish I knew off the top of my head.
What's your favorite wine. I know you were selling wine for a long time and working with a lot of brands. Yeah. What's your favorite go-to wine to drink?
Oh man, I'm very boring when it comes to wine. I like my Penfolds, man. It's just
great news.
I love Penfolds.
Oh my god. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah, I'm not even joking. Yeah, I'm a big Penfolds fan. My only worry is that sometimes I'm like, man, there's so much Penfolds sold in China. Like, is it all real? And that's something that I do think about.
I do have to say good things about Penfolds and trying to make sure all the products are real, though. To be honest, I am working with them right now.
Oh,
so
okay.
Full disclosure right there. I didn't even know you didn't know that as well.
No, I didn't know.
So I do have to say great things about how much work they're doing to fight that and, you know, to protect the IP, to also protect the brand. So actually, I do have to say if there is anything I'm very proud about Penfolds is that there's so much work getting done to make sure that what you do consume is real. So flags off to the team that's working on that. So I'd say wherever you're getting your stock, though, is probably legit.
Yes, we make sure that every bottle we have is legally imported, legally like registered and everything, taxes paid and everything. So yeah.
Third question, what's your favorite restaurant in Shanghai?
Oh, that changes every week. Okay, give me a food category at least.
Xiaolongbao.
Oh, Xiaolongbao. Oh, I'm old school, man. I'm like Ding Tai Fung.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've offended like 90% of Shanghainese viewers. Yeah.
No, it's okay. You know what? You gotta like what you like, you know?
No, I love a Ding Tai Fung. But let's say outside of like Shanghainese food or Xiaolongbao, I'm a big fan of Charlie's Burger. I'm a big burger guy.
Well, we went there last week. Let me tell you, I think I gained a couple pounds.
Yeah, and that's okay though, because it's Charlie's Burger and it's so good.
Justification then, right?
Yeah. Full disclosure here. I mean, he's a very close friend of mine. So, yeah. But I mean, I've been to many burger joints in Shanghai and his stuff is probably, he uses good Canadian beef. And, you know, as a Canadian, you got to support your own people. You got to support your own cows.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel, but it's okay.
Too bad the cows didn't make it to enjoy our celebration.
It's okay. It's okay. I made sure I finished that entire burger, so it was not wasted, you know.
And of course, my last question is, how can we get in touch with you? How can we find out more about your adventures? How do we actually research Dropchain? And, you know, let's make sure that we can get our hands on that.
Yeah. Whoever's interested in our project in terms of what we're trying to do in the food traceability space, very happy to connect with you. You can visit our website at www.dropchainproject.com. We have many social media channels that you can connect to, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, all of which are blocked, but it's okay. But within China, you can also search for our WeChat group. You can just search for WeChat ID, Dropchain.
So two drop chains
and you'll find us.
Perfect. Yeah, no. Well, you know what? I'm actually going to add the website as well as the WeChat account. Mm. So not to worry, that's going to be in the show notes. So whoever is listening to this, you will have the information in the show notes. Mm. And once again, Billy, this was awesome to talk with you. I have such a really, really a passion to talk with you just because what you're doing and obviously the background that you have working in the industry, understanding all the key players. So thank you so much for joining us today in the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
Great.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks.